issue many parents do have. One of the questions that I want to ask you is that there's a 12-year-old who is struggling with sleep and is so messed up. How do parents deal with this?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So sleep is very important, especially at this very sensitive age of teenage, 12, 13-year-olds. Sleep kind of, the whole body goes through change, right? Physical yeah. maturity, body goes through change. So sleep is very important that we take care of it. Couple of things. One, obviously, at this age, children tend to become lazy, mm-hmm. right? Teenagers go through a stage where they become kind of lazy, where they need to, they want to increase the level of sleep. I remember when they're very young, they wake up at 6 a.m. and parents are kind of pulling their hair out. Why do my kids wake up at 6 a.m?
Yes.
But then when they turn 15, when they're 13, 14, 15, children don't wake up until 12, 11 a.m., 12 noon, 1 p.m. And then children, parents, again, are putting their hair off. That my child is so lazy, doesn't wake up until half the day is gone. We kind of have to hit the middle ground where it's natural for these teenagers to kind of perhaps require more sleep. But we have to be careful and make sure that they also have their exercise and they're also very active during the day. That yeah. will really help them too. So how do we do this? One is that together understand how much really a child needs sleep.
Okay. Right?
And you realize that usually 12 to 13-year-olds, 8 hours and above becomes more. They don't need that much. They're okay. very likely we can go and sleep 11 hours.
Mm-hmm. Right?
But they don't need it. They themselves will tell you, yeah, that was a bit laziness. That was just because I didn't have anything else to do. So one is to always kind of together with a child, with this teenage boy, discuss how much hours of sleep do you need. Usually it's between 7 to 8 hours, maybe a bit more, sometimes 8.5, but more than that becomes. The second thing is the time of sleeping. Again, teenagers love to stay up all night.
Yes.
Right? Slowly, you want to discourage that. Try and help them to understand the value of sleeping at night, waking up early in the morning, the value of doing things in the morning rather than at nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very difficult challenge. Today's world somehow is sleeping very late at night and waking up late in the morning.
Yes.
Amongst the things you can do is make sure that they have activities starting very early in the day, activities that they like. So for example, if your child loves football, organize football at 8 a.m. Right.
Okay.
If your child can get some work going, especially in summer, for example, if they can do some activities that they really enjoy, make those things happen early in the morning so they're kind of forced to sleep early at night.
Okay.
And those activities that they can do, that they're doing at night, if they can be moved to the morning and the afternoon, that would be ideal. But again, I understand this is sometimes very difficult. Balance it out. If you can, if it's very difficult, one of the other solutions you could do is have nap times.
Okay.
So they can sleep late at night, still wake up in the morning, early mm-hmm. in the morning, and then have a bit of nap time in the afternoon. But that's very difficult because by nap time, we mean half an hour.
Yes.
Maximum an hour. It should never be 3 hours of sleep, especially not on a full stomach after lunch.
Especially, yeah.
So we have to be careful of those kind of things. So play with a very important kind of notion of sleeping early at night, waking up early in the morning. But obviously in difficult challenges, things kind of arrange to help that happen as much as we can.
Well, we need to manage that as parents. What else we can do? I'll ask you after a shorter break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIP English Radio.
Hey, stop! I got a
IRIP English Radio presents a priceless gift to parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys, one is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5, and they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry, we're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Brother, you said that we need to manage time even in the afternoon naps. We have to make sure that it's for half an hour or so, but not for 3 hours for us. I personally, talking about teenagers later on, I personally have a child, a baby boy who is 7 years old, almost seven plus now. And he is like, if I ask him, if I try to tell him, please have an afternoon nap, because there's so much play, make mess around. And if I, for example, if I personally want to take a nap, I would first request him to go for a nap. And my son would answer like, the sun has not switched off yet. He understands the concept like we have to sleep only at night. Yeah. So there are even kids, there are especially boys, they really hate sleeping, be that at daytime, that at nighttime. What else can parents do to deal with them?
I would say it's a very good thing. Children to be saying that I don't want to nap. See, nap is only a requirement. So if children don't have to nap, then don't nap them.
True.
Ideally, they shouldn't even nap. It's not necessary.
Yeah.
And for a child to say, I don't want to say, I know, because I know what you mentioned, my 7-year-olds hate sleep, whatever time of the day it is. And he says this explicitly, I hate sleep, right? But when he sleeps, obviously he sleeps quite a lot, but they do, it's a very normal thing. It's actually a very good thing. Children are full of life, basically. They want to be active. They've got a lot of things to do. It's very good.
Yes.
As a general principle, especially in teenagers, the more active they are, the better.
Yeah.
You want to literally tire them out, right? If you want your teenagers to go through a very good puberty period, okay, just knock them out, right? Like, do so much activity from morning to afternoon that they really get tired.
Okay.
Plenty of sports, right? Plenty of intellectual activity. Just keep them busy, on their toes.
Recreation.
It shouldn't be that they feel like, oh, I'm bored, I've got nothing to do. You've got a couple of hours of no work. No, that shouldn't
you
be
mean
the
to
case.
Say, like, if I want my child to have sleep at early, I want my child to sleep early and wake up early, I should make sure that he also does not have a sedentary life.
Exactly. Yeah. Sedentary life is very much detrimental for a good sleep.
Okay.
Another point, I'll mention 2 points and I'll move into a more important one. One of them is sleeping on a full stomach, especially teenagers.
Okay.
That should be avoided at all costs. So if you have bedtime, make sure bedtime is at least an hour or two after dinner. And again, if you're napping them as well, make sure that you're napping them at least either before lunch or a bit after lunch, not straight away on a full stomach.
Okay.
And secondly is the important point I want to mention is having a sleep routine is very important as well. The activities before sleep really have an impact on quality sleep.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about quantity of sleep, how much a child sleep. But also remember, quality sleep is important, if not more important. So sleep routine, many things you can talk about. So firstly, obviously, sleep routine means that you have a number of items of things that you do and you don't do before sleep.
Okay.
So for example, having routines like going to the bathroom, brushing your teeth, doing wudu, especially at that age, they can understand the concept of doing wudu before sleeping.
This way you can introduce the concept of changing your bed into the mosque.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, as the hadith mentions. And then wearing pyjamas, basically. So that's kind of 4 or 5 items they do before sleep.
Yeah.
Psychologically, what happens is that the brain mentally prepares itself for bed. They know if they do this for 2-3 months, okay, what will happen is that the moment they do these four things, they naturally feel tired. And they finally feel ready to go to bed.
Okay.
Another thing is, what are they doing before sleep? So screen time, avoid screen time an hour or two, if not more, before sleep. Screen time doesn't help a lot. In fact, it's not just for kids as well. It's for adults as well.
Never sleep with
your phone next to your bed. Always switch off your phone an hour or two before bed.
Okay. So screen time is also important. How is that important? I'll ask you that again after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIP English Radio.
The Prophet ﷺ said, "No father has granted a gift to his child better than good manners."
يا مقضي الخيرات
Welcome back. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Brother, you were talking about screen time.
So screen time, from a physiological perspective, the studies out there, you can Google it. You'll find out how screen time affects sleep patterns.
It's there.
The light from screen and other factors as well leads to kind of a, not a messed up sleep pattern, but doesn't play a good role in sleep quality sleep.
And that way they also become addictive.
Addiction to screen time is a completely another matter. Obviously, you want to avoid them to be addicted to screen time. But in terms of sleep, having your phone on or having screen time an hour or two before sleep will actually have a detrimental effect on your
sleep
quality. Reading books and doing story time before sleeping is very good.
Okay.
So if you can encourage teenagers, 12, 13-year-olds, even before that as well, to read books before sleeping is not a bad thing.
Okay.
Having a reading culture at home is very important.
Okay.
But obviously, always monitor what they read. Mm-hmm. Encourage good books to be read. Even if it's novels, encourage good novels to be read. Good children's books to be read. Monitor that as well. But definitely have a reading kind of culture, even before sleep, is good. It's part of a good routine.
Okay.
And last point is sleeping and waking up kind of requires a mental decision as well.
Okay.
So teach your children, especially at this 12, 13 years, as you mentioned, was a messed up sleep pattern. Teach them and tell them about the power of your brain and the power that you have to kind of make a decision to sleep and make a decision to wake up. I'm not saying that it's completely in our control. Obviously, Allah is the one who brings about sleep and wakes us up. But for our body to be prepared to go to sleep, we need to make a decision. So children who say, okay, I know I'm going to sleep at 10 o'clock or 11 p.m., for example, make a decision that I'm going to sleep at 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
It'll help them sleep better. And again, waking up, same thing as well. Remember, at 12, 13, they should be waking up for Fajr already now.
Yeah.
And that should actually be a habit by now to be able to wake up at 12, 13. So if they have an alarm, make sure that they put them the alarm themselves and that they train themselves to wake up for Fajr. If they sleep after Fajr, it's not a big deal. They can sleep after Fajr, but they do wake up for Fajr. They make a decision before going to sleep to wake up for Namaz of Fajr.
Yeah.
And same thing, they make a decision to wake up in the morning at what time.
Yeah.
It should never be the case that you sleep in the morning, sleep at night, and you say, I'll wake up whenever I wake up.
Yes. Right?
If that happens, then you'll be sleeping until 12.
Yeah.
Teach your child, say, whatever time you're going to sleep, say, decide what time you're going to wake up.
Yeah.
It's fine if it's half an hour late or an hour late. That's fine, right?
Yeah.
But you've decided that I'm going to wake up at 6 o'clock. I'm going to wake up at 7 o'clock. I'm going to wake up at 9 o'clock. They make this decision.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like I'll wake up whenever I wake up and that's it. You just go and laze about.
Well, that was also a nice point. And parents can also help their children understand that sleeping time is a time when a child has to analyze what good he did, what bad he did throughout the day, and he can avoid bad things and they can encourage him doing good things again. Thank you so much, brother, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners.
Jazakallah.
You were listening to IRIV English Radio. This was Islamic Upbringing. In case you have any questions for us, please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until another session, fi amanallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
The logic behind Imam Hussein's uprising. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Imam Hussein, peace upon him, left Medina for Mecca on 27th of Rajab 60 AH. But before setting out, he wrote a letter to his brother Muhammad ibn Hanafiye. He wrote in a part of the letter, "This is a testament which Hussein, son of Ali, writes and gives it to his brother Muhammad ibn Hanafiye. I testify that there is no deity except the one, Creator,
and I bear witness to his oneness. And I testify that Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, is God's servant and God's messenger and was sent from God. I testify that paradise and hell are true and the day of resurrection will occur and there is no doubt in it. And I testify that God will revive all the dead. Then Imam Hussein, peace upon him, explains the motive for his movement as follows. O God, be witness and let others know that I have not started this movement as an ambitious, pleasure-seeking, seditionist, and unjust person. Rather, I seek reform in my grandfather's ummah. I want to bid what is good and forbid what is evil. And I want to act according to the practice of my grandfather and father. Imam Hussein's words and the words of other imams are the best and most reliable documents to reveal the logic behind his movement. Revival of genuine Islam and cleansing the distortions from Islam were the motive behind Imam Hussein's great movement. The distortions and innovations which had happened during 20 years of Muawiyah's rule had turned into principles, and the religion of God was on the precipice of total collapse and annihilation. Yazid, the licentious son of Muawiyah, was the corruption incarnate. He was the embodiment of every evil and sin. If Muawiyah would pretend to be religious to deceive masses, Yazid wouldn't observe religious codes and principles even in public. In his Hajj pilgrimage, Yazid took part in drinking and revelry near the mausoleum of the Prophet in Medina. Officials and influential figures were opposed to Yazid's succession of Muawiyah, but they agreed with this issue out of the fear of Muawiyah. Imam Hussein, peace upon him, seeing the depth of perversion and corruption in the Islamic Ummah, understood that there was no way except a great revolution to salvage the whole Ummah. In one of his sermons, the Imam said to Muslims, and indeed all free-spirited people in history, "Do you not see that truth is not practiced and falsehood is not forbidden? In such conditions, a faithful should wish to meet his Lord by death." In one of the texts of Ziyarat, or standard form of salutation of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, we address the Imam with the words, "I testify that you made God's halal as halal and God's haram as haram. You maintained prayer, gave zakat. You bade what is good and forbade what is evil. I testify that you practice fairness and justice and invited to these too." One of the great concerns of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, was the silence of influential figures against the corruption and deviation of the Umayyad regime. In fact, their silence and seclusion from the social affairs had set the ground for spread of corruption by the ruling system. Had the course of leadership not changed after the Prophet, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, wouldn't have been forced to stand against corrupt rulers at the cost of sacrificing his life and that of his companions and captivity of the children and womenfolk of the Prophet's progeny. In view of this, before leaving Mecca for Kufa, Imam Hussein delivered a very strong and fiery sermon among a group of ulema and elites of various Islamic lands. In this sermon, the Imam seriously censured the taciturnity of ulema against anti-religious policies of the Umayyad regime and called any compliance and compromise with the regime as an unforgivable sin. Then he clarified his motive of uprising. O God, you know that what we have done has not been for rivalry and competition in ruling and excessive demands of the petty material of the world. It has rather been done for demonstrating the signs of your religion and revealing reform in your lands. We want your oppressed servants to be secure and your obligations, traditions, and laws to be practiced. The public negligence and inattention to innovations and corruptions of the Umayyad ruling system also was a great concern for Imam Hussein, peace upon him. The Imam thus started his movement to revive insight among people and awaken their hearts and minds. If they distinguished between truth and falsehood, they would choose the right path. Imam Hussein stood against Yazid to the last drop of his blood to awaken dormant consciences. In another ziyarat for Imam Hussein, we address God with the words, Hussein sacrificed the blood of his heart to salvage your servants from ignorance and bewilderment of misguidance.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, the lifestyle of Imam Hussein. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z from the IRB English Radio, and I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. Now, in today's lesson, we want to talk about a very important personality, and that is Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam, who was the grandson of the Prophet. Now, as I'm talking about his lifestyle, I would like to portray in a few words the introduction. I would like to give a short introduction about this particular human being, this particular personality, that indeed is a personality that brought change in the aspects of people's life, that brought change in the lives of the people that he lived with during his era. Now, in the history of Islam, there was no one more than Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam who has benefited Islam and bestowed its kindness and merits, because his eminence alayhi salam is the savior and the revivalist of this great religion, whom the Umayyad politics attacked and injured, and on the other hand, put obstacles in his path. Now, their internal and external discords were of such a level that there was no one who could save the people from destruction. Now, they were absolutely helpless, and nothing remained in their society to oppose or to resist or to protest against. The operations of the tyrannical rulers, in other words, were such that these people could not stand against them. The people could not say no to them. The people could not say, we have had enough. And there was no one who could help them from this particular situation. And in other words, the ruler has clearly announced to his subject that there was no religion, there was no Islam, no revelation, and no scripture. In this case, he means no Quran at all. Now, this was the situation that the people during the life of Imam Hussein, before he started to stand against this operation, this was the situation the people were going through. Now, what is the role of Imam Hussein in such like a situation?
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and we are talking about a short introduction into how Imam Hussein came into the picture of his life. We are talking about his lifestyle, but indeed, we are here just saying, how was the situation during his time? How was the situation that his people lived during the time that Imam Hussein decided that he will stand against oppressiveness, he will stand against oppressions and the tyrannical rulers of the time? Now, Imam Hussein at the time, he realized that the tyrannical rulers, the rulers who were there, said that they were against the religion, they were against Islam, and they even say that the revelation or the scripture, the Quran, was not there. It's reported from Yazid bin Muawiyah, La'anatullah alayh, when he said, "The Hashemite played are in the rain. Neither any news arrived, nor any revelation descended from the heavens." And also, it's reported from Walid bin Yazid, when he said, "A Hashemite played with the post of caliphate without any revelation or book having revealed on him." Whatever has reached us, if we study it clearly, we will find nothing but disbelief and apostasy, and very few people remained having faith in Allah and the last day, or even very few people have remained who will consider Islam to have any value. Now, without any doubt, not a single portion of the light of Islam had entered their heart. Rather, their souls were already full of bigotry. They were full of ignorance, and not a single quality of disbelief was removed by the force of Islam. They harbored malice, animosity towards the Prophet, and they denied everything that the Messenger had brought as a mercy for all the world. Imam Hussein's work was to make sure that this particular trait, this particular stand, this particular belief goes away, is perished. It's to make sure that people believed in Quran, people believed in the words of the Prophet, and people believed in the world of hereafter, in the last day of judgment. Thank you so much for listening. Until next episode, fi amanillah, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be left tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence filled the air.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
You might think twice about throwing out your old trainers after this story. A startup in Tunisia breathes new life into old shoes as artists restore and even customize the footwear. The new business is called Kenenti and is located in the capital, Tunis. Here, the team uses fabrics, laces and leather recovered from various factories for the repair work. The creative artists work on every detail during each project, even the soles of the shoes. The work aims to find solutions to shoe waste and reuse items instead of adding them to the world's landfills. Cherif Zerroui is the co-founder of Kenenti. He says the idea came to him 2 years ago when he discovered the number of shoes thrown away each year in Tunisia.
In France, there were 100 million pairs of shoes thrown away every year. This is a huge figure for us and for the ecosystem and for the earth. In Tunisia, it's almost the same given the population. There were 3 or 4 million shoes thrown away every year. So we thought of giving added value to these shoes, so we restored them.
Zerbui also says he is happy to create jobs for those willing to participate regardless of the educational degree. Besides shoes, these artists dabble in restoring worn-out handbags, giving them a brand new look. Many of the artists and interns say they are proud to be part of this unique project. They say they feel like a family there. The startup is the first trainer restoration business to be launched in North America. Would you buy a pair of scrap tire sandals? Well, in the Vietnamese capital, Hanoi, you will find all kinds of handmade sandals from recycled tires. The famously rugged footwear of the Viet Cong have traveled vast distances over the decades. Shoemakers use sharp knives and chisels to craft a sandal from huge tires. For those seeking a nod to yesteryear, the hard-sole sandals are available at markets and small stores alike, with prices ranging from $2 to $1,000. The Vietnamese first began making rubber sandals in the late 1940s during the first Indochina War against the French, using tires from ambushed army trucks. They found the sandals were cheap to make and survive well in wet, muddy and hilly conditions. Even in peacetime, the design remains popular for sustainability reasons. Living through a pandemic is strange as we are often locked indoors, but a UK-based Indian mechanical engineer made the best use of his time during the coronavirus lockdown and built an airplane. 38-year-old Ashok Ali Serial, who is also a private pilot, had long dreamt of a personal aircraft. He initially planned to order an aircraft kit and built it with his colleagues, but he says the 2020 lockdown left him with no choice but to complete it on his own. Now he has an aircraft which he has named after his youngest daughter, Dia. The plane can carry up to 4 people, including the pilot, and fly about 250 kilometers an hour. After getting clearance to fly, he flew across 4 European countries with his friends. He has also gone on a trip with his family of 4. Some gardens are decorated with genomes and other cute ornaments, but this garden uses tank debris to stand out amongst others. The intention of the gardener isn't to have the most army-themed patch. Valeria tried to remove the tank, but ultimately because of its size and weight, it was impossible. So he just let it stay. The owner says he is used to having the tank there, even though it reminds him of hard times. Next to the wreckage, this family has planted cabbage and potatoes, which they harvest and use each year. The tank was left over from the war between Russia and Ukraine that began earlier this year. British paleontologists have made an exciting fossil discovery which has been identified as the earliest known animal predator.
It's quite a large fossil. It's the preserved part is at least 20 centimetres tall, and it would have lived attached to the seafloor bottom. But it's a broken specimen, so we actually don't know how large the entire colony is. This is only a fragment of it.
Wilby says the animal had a stalk and a cup on top with little tentacles, which most likely used to catch food out of the water. The ancient animal is related to sea anemones, jellyfish and corals, and pushes the known existence of these species back to 20 million years. Wilby explains the fossil displays a key point in the evolution of animal. The fossil is said to be around 560 million years old and was discovered in Charnwood Forest, northern England, amongst over 1,000 other fossils.
Summer heat is here, and zoos are working to not only keep visitors cool, but animals safe during the hot weather. A Belgian zoo takes extra precautions to help animals survive a fierce heat wave that has left Western Europe sweltering. Pierre Deyser Zoo, located in Wallonia in the province of Hainaut, provides animals with frozen food, fruit suspended in water, and extra showers. It has also created extra shaded areas with good ventilation along with water points to ensure animals have access to them. Zookeepers say managing animals in high temperatures requires good forward planning. Zoos across the world have a variety of responses to keep animals cool. So we humans are not the only creatures who feel significant stress during the hot months. Animals, too, are impacted by it.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Iran's city of Rafsanjan has hosted an international talent contest dubbed Stage Stars. The event is aimed at providing a chance for stage talents from across the world to come in the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali reports from Rafsanjan. Let's check it out.
This is a global stage for talents. The fifth International Stage Stars Festival wrapped up with the announcement of winners, who have been competing in four categories of singing, voice acting, show hosting, and sound impression. The top performances from each category won the golden mic and a cash prize.
The festival was a place for more serious competition between those who have a say in a stage performance. I'm so happy to be chosen by the jury as the best show host of the contest.
It was an amazing event for talents. I'm so glad to be part of this. Talents from all across Iran and many parts of the world competed in the festival, so winners should be proud of themselves.
Held in Iran's city of Rafsanjan, the two-day event brought together participants from 14 countries, including Iran, Afghanistan, Kyrgyzstan, Nigeria, and Turkey, to flaunt their knack for stage performance.
The scale of this contest is global. Many of us participants did not have any idea we could be stand-up comedians or show hosts. But when we got on stage here, we ourselves discovered our own talents.
I really love that, seeing that all people around the world are coming here and presenting themselves. It's a very great feeling. Of course, they will be progressed and they will develop yourself when they will got the result.
The jury is comprised of top Iranian actors, TV presenters, and voice artists. They say the competition has been tough, and those who stood out are real stage stars.
We tried our best to pick talents who really acted like professionals on stage. Not only should they care about the standards and principles of a stage performance, but they must innovate, improvise and stand out.
This festival acted like a university for stage talents. It taught a lot of lessons about stage to participants, especially for those who failed to win the contest.
Organizers say this contest is not just about scouting for stage talents. They say the event helps shine a spotlight on talents and lead them to their community.
The fifth Stage Stars Festival is aimed at bringing stage talents to light. Many of the participants already have a few years of experience, so this stage is not supposed to discover them, but to springboard them to a higher level in their careers.
All of the contestants, even those who come from foreign countries, must perform in Persian. However, organizers plan to include other languages in the upcoming editions of the festival.
To those who won the golden mic here, this is a dream come true. But they say, aside from the prize, Stage Stars has marked a milestone in their pursuit of success, since they have now come under the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Rafsanjan.
Age is just a number when it comes to pursuing your goals. That's what 98-year-old Italian man Giuseppe Paterno has proven. Paterno has become the oldest university graduate in his country for the second time. In July 2020, he was graduated in history and philosophy from the University of Palermo. 2 years on, he's now got a master's degree in the same subjects. Paterno grew in a poor family in Sicily and always had a desire for learning. But he was unable to go to university at a young age. He finished high school aged 31, 6 years after he got married. Paterno's love to study or for study never stopped, making him enter the university in his 90s.
The biggest and brightest supermoon of 2022 has risen with a crimson hue above horizons across the globe. It's also known as a buck moon because it falls in July. The name does not come from its appearance. You won't see the shape of a deer on the moon's surface or anything. It refers to something that happens in nature at this time. It's called a buck moon because the antlers of male deer or bucks are in full growth in July. Supermoons occur when a full moon comes closest to Earth in its orbit. This is not the last supermoon of 2022. There will be another in August, marking the final supermoon in this year's set of four.
بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرج.
السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله. السلام عليك يا ابن رسول الله. السلام عليك يا ابن فاطمة الزهراء. السلام عليك يا ابن أمير المؤمنين. Assalamu alaikum, respected brothers and sisters, and welcome to Let's Recite the Quranic Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. We really welcome you and thanks for joining us again.
Assalamu alaikum.
So, inshallah, in this session, we will continue through the lesson Al-Mad that we explained. We practiced how we stretch the sound, how we, for how many counts we stretch the sound, yes?
Yes.
So, everything we talked about in the previous session, inshallah, we'll continue the same topic with more details, okay? In details. So, we said that short vowels we have fatha, kasra, tamma. Long vowels we have alif, maddi, waw, maddi, and ya'i, maddi. And also then we talked about a mad itself, the sign of mad. So it's very important to remember all these points, okay? These alif and waw and ya with fatha, kasra, dhamma that produce a long vowel sound, they are also called huruful maddiya. Okay, what? Huruful maddiya, the mad letters. Okay, yes. The mad letters also they are called. Because sometimes some of the mad, okay, some of the mad or long sounds, okay, are especially applied with these three letters. Okay, that we'll go on and learn them. So guys, one thing we have to practice, that's about lean letters. Lean letters that we apply the lean mad or mad the lean, okay? The lean letter is this, that you have ya and waw, these two letters. What letters?
Ya and waw.
These two letters. Ya and waw. But they are sakin. Ya is sakin and waw is sakin. These two letters are called lean letters if they are sakin. But there is one condition, that before this waw and ya is sakin, there has to be a fatha. Okay? A fatha. So, suppose there is an alif, a hamza, with a fatha, then waw is sakin. How do you read it? Fatha. And then waw sakin, join them together.
Ow.
Okay, now instead of waw, ya?
Ay.
So, in the tajweed, this is called maddilin, but the way you recite it was not mad. So let's practice the maddilin. Maddilin means, it's a type of mad. It means the easy mad or the soft mad. Look how I pronounce Quraysh. Ay, khawf, ow. This ow sound and ay sound, a little longer, two counts. This is called maddilin. And the letter yai sakin and waw sakin are called lean letters. Okay? So, let's practice ow, read it with ba. Bow,
tau,
thou,
jow,
how,
how,
dow,
thou,
and wow, okay.
Yeah.
So the letter Yana,
ay,
bay,
tay,
fay,
jay,
yay. All right? So this is maddilin. Very easy and simple. You see, the names were so kind of difficult, yes?
Yes.
That's mad. Very easy. Maddilin. Just remember the two letters, the lean letters, waw sakin and
ya sakin.
But there is a condition. There has to be a fatha before these two letters, okay? Or it's called preceded by a fatha, okay? Or it's called that yai sakin preceded by a fatha. It means a fatha has to come before. Or waw sakina preceded by a fatha. All right? Preceded means something before it. Followed means something after it. Okay? If, for example, we say waw preceded by a fatha, what does it mean? It means there is fatha. A fatha before waw.
Yes.
Waw followed by a fatha. It means?
After.
There is a fatha after waw. But ya'ilin is not about a a fatha a waw or ya followed by a fatha. Rather, it is a waw sakin or ya sakin preceded by a fatha, not a dhamma. If it is a dhamma with waw, it is waw maddi. If it is a ya a kasra, ya maddi. No, a fatha. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, that's great.
الذين يذكرون الله قياما وقعودا وعلى جنوبهم.
If you see the Holy Quran in Surah Muzammil, ayat number 20, Allah Tabarak wa Ta'ala says, and recite as much as possible from the Quran. As much as possible.
That's why they say one of the beauties of the eloquence of the fasahat and balaghat of the Quran is that whenever you open the Quran, it's as if it speaks to you today very, very clearly.
The Quran is a covenant of God for His creature. It is misaq. It is covenant for His servants. It is necessary for the Muslims to read this covenant and recite 50 words every day.
So let's practice some more examples. In Surah Maryam, verse number 4, قَالَ رَبِّ إِنِّي وَهَنَ الْعَظُمُ مِنِّي وَاشْتَعَلَ الرَّأْسُ شَيْبًا. Yes. وَاشْتَعَلَ الرَّأْسُ شَيْبًا. Okay. Surah Quraysh. Surah Quraysh. Who knows? I know. So, I recite. Repeat after me. A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. There was an example.
Yes.
Listen. A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Shaytanir rajim. Okay. So, recite.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
لإلاف قريش
لإلاف قريش
إلافهم رحلة الشتاء والصيف
إلافهم رحلة الشتاء والصيف
قريش صيف. Okay.
Yes.
فَلْيَعْبُدُوا رَبَّ هَذَا الْبَيْتِ
فَلْيَعْبُدُوا رَبَّ هَذَا الْبَيْتِ
بَيْت قُرَيْش صَيْف. Examples, okay?
Yes.
الَّذِي أَطْعَمَهُم مِّن جُوعٍ وَآمَنَهُم مِّن خَوْفٍ
الذي أطعمهم من جوع وآمنهم من خوف.
أحسن. خوف. Okay. The example for
واولين.
يايلين and
واولين.
واولين. Okay. Is there any question?
No.
Was it difficult or easy? Yes, the name was a bit difficult. Yes. So what does lean mean? Easy and
simple. Yes,
simple and soft.
Soft.
Soft. Soft. So, how many cases do we have with maddilin? Two cases.
Two cases.
Wow and
ya.
Wow and ya. Wow. Sakin. Wow and ya. Preceded by
fatha.
Yeah. Fatha. That's the case with wow maddilin. Okay. The next type of mad is mad tabi'i. Mad tabi'i. What does it mean?
The normal
or natural mad.
Yes.
Normal or
natural
mad. So the normal or natural mad, you know this. If I make the example, you will understand what I mean. So let me read this example. مأكول مأكول. Pay attention. If you hear a longer sound than a, e, u, that is a mad. Okay? Listen. مأكول. Where is the mad?
Wow.
Wow. On wow, okay? مأكول.
Yes.
What do you think? What type of mad it is?
Natural.
Natural mad. But what we studied something before.
Vav maddi.
Vav maddi. Very easy.
Yes.
Listen to this example. Tarmihim.
Yai maddi.
Yai maddi. Bihijarantin.
Alif maddi.
Natural mad is?
Uh-huh.
Huruful maddiya. Alif maddi, vav maddi, an?
Yai maddi.
But there is one condition. If there is not a hamza, okay, after them. Look, there is no fatha. Sorry, there is no hamza, okay, after this waw maddi, alif maddi, or
yai
maddi. If there is no hamza letter, okay, that's called natural mad. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you so much. We talked, alhamdulillah, about mad. Some topics are left okay in math. We'll inshallah practice the next of them in the next sessions. Thank you so much for being with us. If you have any questions, you can ask us. Inshallah, we'll help you regarding the Quran Karim. Thanks to IRIB English Radio and also Sevier International Schools Network. Thanks to Hussein Ruhullah, Ali Nasir, Fawad Haider, Habibullah Fazizada, and see you inshallah in the next sessions. والحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد
اللهم صل على محمد
وآل محمد وعجل فرجه
أين الحسن أين الحسين أين أبناء الحسين أين الحسن أين الحسين أين أبناء الحسين أين الحسن أين الحسين أين أبناء الحسين
In solidarity, the heavens and earth will grieve. Divinely pure ones, oppressed in tyranny, sacrifice their lives for truth and unity, equality and freedom for humanity. These are the sons of the one that God calls a new. Masters of the youth of paradise, who gave their lives to guide us on to the right.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.